RV Family Travel Atlas is sponsored by Progressive Insurance. Get an RV policy quote by calling 1-800-PROGRESSIVE or visiting progressive.com/RV. And by Cabela's, the world's foremost outfitter. Let Camp Cabela's help get you ready for your next great camping adventure at cabelas.com.
And by Campers Inn. To find your family's next RV, visit campersinn.com. And by Yogi Bear's Jellystone Park Camp Resorts. To find a campground near you, visit campjellystone.com.
Hi, everyone. Welcome to this week's episode of RV Family Travel Atlas. I'm Stephanie.
And I'm Jeremy.
And we write about RV and family travel with our three boys, Theo, Max, and Wes.
You can read about our adventures at RVFamilyTravelAtlas.com. And you can follow us on Facebook, Twitter, Pinterest, and Instagram.
On this week's episode of RV Family Travel Atlas, we are heading to the RV capital of the world, Elkhart County, Indiana. We recently had the opportunity to spend some time visiting the region where one out of every two RVs is manufactured.
If you are an RV enthusiast, this is a fun stop to put on a travel itinerary. We will talk about the RVMH Hall of Fame, factory tours, and Amish country treats. We will also talk about some camping options that are available in the area.
You might think that Elkhart County is just a destination for those who are building and selling RVs, but we know that camping fanatics will love visiting this region seeped in RV culture. You are listening to episode number 102, Greetings from the RV Capital of the World.
Before we head into our news roundup, it's time for a sponsored message by our friends at Progressive Insurance.
When you sign up for an RV policy, you can also sign up for total loss replacement, optional protection that replaces your new RV with a current model if it's declared a total loss in the first 2 years. Get a quote by calling 1-800-PROGRESSIVE or visiting progressive.com/RV today.
Now, in certain situations, RV insurance can make you happy.
Yeah, I knew that. This is your favorite message.
Most of the time, you don't think about it.
It gets you thinking about
a new
RV. But
then when you need it, you're smiling from ear to ear.
I actually feel that way about insurance. It's not a bill that I know this isn't part of the ad.
We've never been like thought bad things about insurance.
No, we've had little things over the years that, you know, like little insurance payments on the fence after Superstorm Sandy or things like that. And it's just like, wow, it's so nice that those things are covered. I don't know. I don't mind paying those bills every month. Those ones. I mind other ones.
Yeah.
The cable bill, for example.
Yeah. Now, we were hanging out with our friends at Progressive at the Balloon Festival. That was the New Jersey Balloon Festival. We had a great time there, though. The weather was a little bit crazy.
It was.
And Third Eye Blind was also a little bit crazy.
They were still
pretty good. They were better 20 years ago.
Well,
but so were
you
we.
You know what? If you didn't read our blog post on our time at the Balloon Festival, I'll put the link to that in the show notes for this episode. Take a look at that, because it was just so funny that here we're from New Jersey and we have never been to the Balloon Festival. It was always one of those things. This is a famous festival. I mean, in the country.
As far as balloon festivals go, it's up at the top.
It's up there. It always makes it onto lists of like the best summer festivals and everything. And so it was always there. And I was always saying like, oh yeah, let's get to the festival, blah, blah, blah. And then we just wouldn't get there. And it was actually nice that we did this year because we had a blast.
We did. And we'll go back next year,
yeah,
hopefully with Progressive.
And
but even, you know, we'll go back
the
either way.
Because we were lucky we saw the early launches, like on Friday, and Saturday morning was a launch, because after that, oh my goodness, the weather just kept.
I got some crazy pictures of the storm coming in. Like people flint. I mean, they had to evacuate. Not evacuate is probably the wrong word. They had to clear out the festival and tell people to wait in their cars on like at least two occasions.
Yeah, and they could come back. So anyway, it wasn't like we got a taste of it. but we didn't get to experience it in its entirety.
Now, we are super excited to be going to the Hershey RV show again. So we will be hanging at the Progressive RV for the entire show from September 14th to 18th. We're going to have set hours each day, a block of time, and we'll get those posted as soon as we know what they are. But if you're going to Hershey, and you should be going to Hershey because it's one of the best RV shows in the country, one of the best RV shows in the world, come and see us. Say hello. And the Progressive RV is really one of the most fun things to do there because of all the free swag. And people always say, well, what do I have to do? Not much.
No. The two things are even better. This year, we had a blast last year at the Hershey show with Progressive, but two things are better. First of all, now they have the videos and not just the green screen pictures.
That
the
bear almost got you, girl.
And then also the t-shirts. I'm going to say the t-shirts are better.
Yeah, they're like Happy Camper with a vintage RV. They were more RV-themed t-shirts, mm-hmm. So you were really excited about the t-shirts this year.
Yeah, I would, and you can win
them. And you can win them by spinning the wheel.
If you're lucky.
But everyone wins.
Yeah.
I mean, you might get Progressive wipes and not a t-shirt, but they're the best wipes.
Oh, my gosh.
They're good wipes.
Can I say, I'm not a big sanitizer wipe kind of a person. I don't use them a lot. I'm always like, go wash your hands. So it was so funny. We gave them out in swag bags over the course of some time.
So many compliments.
So it turns out, this is hysterical, Progressive wipes have become kind of famous amongst some of our listeners as being like the best wipes.
Well, if you have a total loss on your RV, they also give you a pack of wipes.
Don't say that. They'll be like, that's not true.
All right. Now listen. No, that's not true. So we're also going to be at the Florida RV Super Show, January 18th to the 22nd. That's in 2017. And registration for camping on the fairgrounds is going to be opening soon. We're going to be giving you updates on the Florida RV Super Show pretty almost every week for a while now until things get rolling. So if you're one of our Florida podcast listeners or someone from Georgia and you're heading to that really terrific RV show, we'll also be there. We'll be hanging out. We'll have some times for meet and greet, and we'll be making a live from podcast about the RV Super
Just
Show.
Just like we did last year. We had such a good time down there seeing a lot of the models, also talking to a lot of the manufacturers.
RV models.
Yeah.
Well, it's Tampa. I mean, everyone looks like a model in Tampa.
Oh,
you ever go to downtown Tampa?
Yeah, we're like,
it's not just Miami that they're good looking. It's also Tampa.
And we didn't get to fit in all the cool Tampa stuff that we had wanted to do last year. We're going to do some more regional stuff.
Downtown Tampa, beautiful.
Yeah.
I mean, it's like every place I go, I think, could I live here? And Tampa passed the test.
Really?
Yeah, I swear it did. I'm not just saying that.
Okay. Right.
I could live in Tampa. It just was like a cool town.
Yeah,
and they had great coffee.
Yeah. So anyway, Hershey Show, Florida RV Super Show, last bit of news.
Apparently, we have a new article out in Trailer Life, and we're on the road right now, so we're not getting our issues of Trailer Life, which is so sad. But somebody commented on social media that they enjoyed our Adirondacks article in the new issue of Trailer Life. So apparently, we are in it must be the September issue at this point. I thought we were going to be in the October issue, but we have a full-length feature on the Adirondacks with what I hope are some great pictures.
Haven't read the article because, of course, we wrote it, so we kind of did read it too, but we haven't quite seen it in the magazine.
Words.
So anyway, check it out, Trailer Life Adirondacks. It's an amazing destination, and in that article, we'll tell you all the reasons why, okay? So you ready to go?
Yeah, and so listen, we're going to come back in a second for our feature topic, greetings from the RV capital of the world.
Stay tuned. Cabela's is passionate about supporting families in their outdoor adventures.
They have everything you need to camp and start making memories that will be treasured for generations.
Check out Camp Cabela's website for fun articles and tips and tricks for getting your family into the great outdoors.
Camp Cabela's, it's in your nature. Welcome back to the show, everybody. It's time for this week's featured topic, greetings from the RV capital of the world. And I had a great time visiting Elkhart County. We stayed in Middlebury. And I think that every RVer should put the RV capital on their bucket list and put the RV Hall of Fame on your bucket list. I think it's a required travel spot for the RV enthusiast.
It is a required travel spot or destination, I think, in spite of itself. Right? Because the thing that we noticed when visiting is that the industry really hasn't done anything to make this a travel destination. Now, that doesn't mean that there aren't things to visit, and that's what we're going to talk about.
Well, they're trying to, and it's right. It's starting with the RV Hall of Fame, and there's a huge effort underway to make the RV Hall of Fame a major museum, and it's becoming that. It's well on its way to becoming that. And Stephanie and I, as we were spending time in the RV capital of the world in Middlebury and Elkhart, kept thinking, this is an awesome place for an RV trip. You know, they could kind of thematically tie it together a little bit more, because we had so many people say, oh, I didn't know you could do factory tours. I've never heard of that. These were people from Indiana.
And that's what I mean by in spite of itself, right? Because this hasn't been sort of a pulled together effort to sort of advertise this area as a destination for people who are interested in RV culture. So I think that this is like my own, like, you know, garage theory here. I kind of feel like for many decades, the dealer was that middleman between the manufacturer and the RV consumer, right? So these manufacturers are out there building their RVs, and then the consumer really had a point of contact with the dealer, not necessarily with the manufacturer.
We've learned in our time in the RV industry that the manufacturers, their customer is the dealer.
Mm-hmm.
You know, in a profound way, the dealers are writing checks and buying the RVs from the manufacturers.
And giving them feedback.
And the savvy and sophisticated manufacturers also do, you know, direct marketing more or less to the consumer. But that's something that's really growing and mm-hmm. changing and evolving right now, where I think that Stephanie's right. A previous generation, you just went to the RV dealer, you bought your RV. That's not the way the world works anymore.
Right.
So we think that, you know, this whole area could be tied into a really awesome major destination for the RV enthusiast. And I have a theory too, which I haven't even really mentioned to you. I think that they need that killer campground. You know, I think they need that obvious grand slam, maybe even resort style might work there.
RV themed, but RV we'll talk themed, more about
yeah,
that, I think,
so
in
much
the
potential.
Campground section.
But we had a great time there. So let's talk about the RV MH Hall of Fame. And the MH is manufactured housing.
Houses, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Which there was very little about that I saw. It really is RV.
Right. So there's the manufactured house outside that you can tour. And I think that it's more of they're courting.
Like, or somebody from the manufactured housing.
They kind of got involved.
Big check or something.
They did, because I think they got involved in writing off some of the debt, the $1 million debt that they've been trying to
I think it was way more
down.
Than a million.
1.4, I think.
Oh, it was 1.4. Mm-hmm. Okay. So the RV Hall of Fame had this serious debt, and I think they've gotten rid of almost all of it at this point. And now they have very aggressive expansion plans, and they are not going to do any of this expansion until the cash is in hand. So we were very impressed with what we saw, which we're about to get into, and it's only going to get better. So let's dive in. Admission was $10 for adults. It's $8 for seniors, $7 for youth. And we took advantage of the family price of $28, which I really loved the fact that they did a family price, because otherwise for us, it would have been quite a bit more.
Yeah. And, you know, hey, take note out there. Anybody that runs anything that's listening to this show, include a family price. We hear sometimes from some of our larger families that certain things can be, you know, downright like overwhelming to pay for if it's a per person cost. So anytime you can kind of bundle a cost and give a discount to a larger family, that's going to be very much appreciated. And they're going to tell their friends.
A lot of our listeners that have 6 or 7 kids are on their way to the RV Hall of Fame right now.
$28.
So it was a great price. And it really, I mean, if it was just you and I could have spent really a whole day there, because we had the 3 boys with us. It was more of a half day thing before it was kind of like time to move on and go get lunch. But there's a lot to see. It's big and the collection is big.
And it is incredibly kid friendly, because our boys were wild for the place the entire time we were there. It was only because we would have liked to have spent more time like reading plaques that we couldn't spend more time. They could have stayed there running in and out of RVs all day.
Max and Theo decided they wanted a photo in front of every RV in the exhibit, which we didn't. It just, there's too many RVs in the exhibit, but literally I did about 20 photos of them.
They want a photo album of it. That's what they want.
They want a separate photo mm-hmm. album of them doing like bro hugs or pretending to be like campers from the 1920s in front of the RVs. They had so much fun. It was almost distracting to me.
Like,
dealing with them having fun, right? Now, there is overnight, air quotes, parking allowed on the grounds. So you can pull up your RV and stay overnight. You won't get kicked out. But what aren't you allowed to do?
They specifically say you are overnight parking. You are not camping. Okay. And they use that word camping, not camping, which means you're not allowed to put any of your slide outs. You're not allowed to put your stability jacks down. You're not allowed to run your lights.
So I imagine you can't barbecue and tailgate there.
No awnings out. You're not
allowed
to.
Now, this is interesting.
Yeah.
It has to be a local ordinance mm-hmm. that's stopping them. And also, there's probably some politics with some of the campgrounds in the area. But the RV Hall of Fame, one of the things they want to do is make it more friendly for rallies. And you could see they have a huge piece of property. So this would be a great place for RVers to come and rally and then visit the museum as part of their rally. So I think they're doing rallies now and they plan on expanding it. Because right now it's just sort of like a field next door.
This would be the perfect place for a large resort campground. Like the places that we talk about that are some of our favorite resort campgrounds. That, you know, it doesn't even have to be in the Yogi Bear style with the water park and everything.
Just full hookups.
Just exactly.
A pool.
Full hookups.
Welcome center.
Really nice landscaping. Really nice communal spaces, pools, things like that. Like, people would really love that.
Yeah,
I
want to poke around a little bit and see if they just don't want to do that because it would tick off the existing campgrounds in the area, because it's almost a no brainer that it would just be like a great place to do that. Pull
yeah,
up,
but
get
you know
full hookups.
How I feel about that politics thing. If those local campgrounds want the business, then they should earn the business. Because if they were running campgrounds that were top-notch, resort quality, people would stay there.
Yeah,
that's free market.
We're going to get into some of the campground options around there. There's a couple of decent options. We just weren't floored by any mm-hmm. of the immediate options. And look, we may have missed a gem. I'm going to say it out loud. Like, maybe there's some great place nearby that we should have checked out. And there is one we're going to try next time, but we'll get into that. Let's talk about the exhibit. So when you walk in, the exhibit's chronological, basically, right? From the earliest RVs up to more current RVs. But first, there's the Go RVing sponsored room, sort of.
And that is not chronological, because the first room that you go into is more of like, it's sponsored by Go RVing, and we all know what Go RVing does so well. It's to communicate the lifestyle. The dream. So there's the movie, the fly fishing movie that Janine Pettit loves.
That's Janine. I think Janine says that's what made her want to get into RVing, was the three generations going fly fishing in the pop-up camper. Janine melted when she saw that.
She says it makes her cry every time. So then there's a few RVs in that room, I would say 6 or 7 probably.
Current ones, like a new Winnebago, one of the new Shastas, one of the new retro Shastas.
1980s on, okay, right. In that room. And so you can kind of see where the RV industry is right now. It's a variety. There's the big fifth wheel, there's the Class C, you know, there's everything in there. Then you go to the next room, and that's where the chronological vintage RV display is. And let me tell you something, it really is a showstopper.
They have an extensive collection. I mean, the collection does not really need to get better. We'll talk about maybe some things that could get better, but it's not the collection. And that to me is the hard part. They've got the RVs to wow you, and they've got a wide variety, an eclectic variety.
Yeah, including the oldest known RV to exist, which is a 1913 Earl travel trailer. I mean, this is the oldest RV. They call it the RV specimen, you know, in existence. That's
These are
amazing.
Almost like covered wagons. They're like pieces of our history. And the boys were really particularly interested in these old ones.
Yeah, well, you know, and so were we. I think we were a little surprised by what we saw. They have the 1931 Chevrolet house car, Mae West's house car from Paramount, right?
Yeah, and can we dive in now to one of our things that's an issue? Because it's going to keep popping up. So okay. I think we should just kind of address it and as we go through. So they have these great RVs that have kind of major cultural roles in American history, but then there's just like a paragraph description of the RV with very little cultural background or history. So to me, you know, we've done a little reading on this, and the RV, industry has a rich history in Hollywood, right? So a lot of people in early Hollywood would use RVs and camped in RVs and use them as their dressing rooms. Mm-hmm. But there just wasn't really much about that. So instead of just plunking down the Mae West RV, we would have liked a more elaborate display and some, you know, a little movie or something, little right. clips or pictures.
So
it brought that to life a little
think
more.
Think about, like, we were at the Roosevelt right historical site lately right recently, and you know, you think about each one of those rooms where they had the artifact, and then they also had a little radio clip, a little video, this little, you know, you could put each one of these RVs could kind of be its own little cubby with other artifacts from that time period around it. And it really, you know, like, I'm thinking there are people out there that have done this work for them. Think about, we had Phil Noyes on our show.
Yes, Trailerama. And he, I mean, look, they need to hire that guy.
Yeah, you know,
like the storytelling part of it, just to be honest, you know, was lacking. And look, that's not the expensive part. The hard part is to go out and get all these RVs donated. Mm-hmm. So in terms of just building in a little more multimedia and a little more storytelling around some of these RVs, we think should be the next step for the RV Hall of Fame.
Yeah, it would make it amazing. We had a great time there and it was really great, but this would make it truly like a curated cultural collection, you know, of artifacts.
Absolutely. So. Now let's talk about some of the other things that we loved, because we did love so many of the things that were on display. Wesley loved the old teardrops, the little tiny teardrops, and he talks about how he wants a tiny trailer now. He wants a little Wesley-sized teardrop,
yeah,
he wanted to pose next to them.
Yeah.
Photos of a lot of these units are up on our Instagram account. If you're not following us, head over there, follow us, and see some of the pictures.
Yeah, we'll also try to get up a blog post with just basically the pictures that we have, because we have so many wonderful ones, and we'll try to get that up when we have better Wi-Fi, because we're out in the middle of nowhere right now. But then we also have a lot of examples of early tent trailers, and these really wowed me. I guess I didn't realize how extensive the collection of early tent trailers was and how popular they were in early RV culture, because like there was the one that was the 1955 Ranger crank-up tent trailer. This was the first use of fiberglass in RV building, and it had upper bunks. Like, so it looked almost like a car, like a flat car to me. And you cranked it up, and then it had upper bunks that folded out, and then it had this back slide out that's unbelievable. I'll put a picture of this in the show notes.
And you see that in the RV industry now, they're almost like magicians in terms of how they create space and how they create beds. And you see that goes deep into their lineage in the RV industry.
Yeah, that's what was so amazing to me, was I was seeing all these references, you know, from today in the past. And I was like, oh, like I didn't, you know, a lot of this stuff, it had its seeds in these early RVs that you never see. You don't see these early tent trailers. What do you see? You see the vintage, you see the Airstream. These are things you see all the time.
Well, yeah.
But these early tent trailers, I felt like showed where a lot of elements
of
modern RVs came from.
That's what I think a lot of people, if not most people, had in the 50s and 60s was sort of these early pop-ups, and then pop-up campers, they sold like wildfire in the 50s, 60s and 70s, while, you know, the canned hams and those things, those are what we're most impressed by and we're most wowed by now. That's not what most Americans owned, if I'm understanding the history correctly.
Yeah.
Now, we are Jayco owners, and we are proud Jayco owners, and Jayco sponsors Campground of the Week. And we saw one of the earliest Jayco pop-up campers there. It was the 40th pop-up camper ever made. And that was with Lloyd Bontrager's patented system.
Cranking
system, mm-hmm. Which I think is still in use. I'm almost positive is still in use. So, you know, he started Jayco on the family farm, and, you know, he left StarCraft, started Jayco, and this was the 40th pop-up camper they ever made on that family farm in Middlebury.
Oh, and I love the color. The color was this awesome, like, turquoisey green kind of color, and it was just amazing. And I was like, I would take this now. Like, that's
yeah, it held
how,
up style-wise.
Holy moly. I was like, this is current.
And
this
honestly,
is fresh.
That pop-up camper from 1968, it looks just as good as any modern pop-up camper. Like, they have not improved on the pop-up camper a whole lot
yeah.
since 1968.
I want to talk about an issue that kept coming up for me, because it's in that pop-up. Okay, so in that pop-up, what you had was the two big double beds on either end, just like you think about in every pop-up. Then next to the two large double beds on each end. On each side, there was a full dinette that folded down to another bed. Okay. So there were four double beds in this pop-up.
So eight people could sleep, you know, comfortably, yeah. Really. In terms of space, right? Maybe you don't want to have eight people inside a pop-up, but you would all legitimately have space to sleep comfortably.
No, and that's what I kept realizing. That was another big aha thing for me in looking at the history of RVs, is these RVs were built to sleep people, not to live people.
That's a great point. So many of the RVs from the 20s, 30s, 40s, 50s, they were about making a comfortable place to sleep. And then, you know, then you go out and have your great outdoor adventure,
yeah.
Right?
You're not living. Like, you know, we're talking about living in RVs now, right? And me, one of my major things is I have to have dedicated beds because I go crazy if we don't have dedicated beds. Well, that I don't really think that was part of the design process then. People weren't expecting dedicated beds. It was, what do? You sleep. So you sleep at night, you put up the dinette if you need to, you put down the couch into the bed, you flop, and you go to sleep at night. You know, like you climb over your brothers and sisters and you find a place to sleep.
And you also see that many of these units were built for that weekend warrior who was going out and camping on the weekend for two nights with their kids as often as possible.
Yeah, some of them, but not all. Like the oldest Winnebago is on display there. And that was another thing. That was another time that this bedding thing, you know, felt like it was really...
Stephanie's obsessed with RV bedding.
Yeah.
You are. It's interesting.
To me, the way that we live and sleep as Americans says a lot about how we travel, right? I mean, like, think about hostels and hotels and resorts. Like, I think it's a very interesting thing. So the oldest Winnebago is very interesting because this was, you know, this is what cemented itself in Americans' minds as, like, being the motorhome, right? For, you know, the American
because
culture.
Because they reached a certain price point that made it accessible to the masses, or, you know, maybe not the masses, but to a wide variety of Americans.
So that original Winnebago, it had the driver seats up front, right? The driver and the passenger seat up front. The only other seating was all the way in the back in the form of a dinette at the back of the Winnebago. Now, that dinette, so you're thinking, oh my gosh, the kids are sitting all the way in the back of the dinette. That's heaven, first of all. I mean, they're a long ways away.
As far away from us as
that's
you
awesome.
Can.
So then they're
but
all the way back
safety
there.
Safety issues.
But yeah. So then that dinette would flip down, and then there was just the one bed above. So you're figuring this family that's traveling in this affordable motorhome, right? They're all sleeping in the back. Like, we don't really do that much in RVs these days.
You know, there are safety issues with having the kids too close to you while you're traveling.
Yeah, it's not safe for anybody.
They'll drive you out of your mind.
Therapy costs. All right. So, you know, I mean, I just found that interesting that when I was looking at the oldest Winnebago, I was like, you know, this is actually quite different.
You know, this is interesting to hear you talk about this because, you know, we talked about this a lot after we visited, but now, you know, hashing it out on air, it seems like you were so interested in the interiors and the sleeping space while I was wowed by the exterior designs and how cool they were and how funky they were and how creative they were, really, compared to a lot of modern RVs. So it seems like you were looking inside. I was looking outside a little bit.
Oh,
I know,
yeah,
that's not all you were doing, but
yeah,
I
was fascinated by the insides and the way that it, to me, I was imagining the stories of the families that traveled in those as a mom, you know, as a wife. Like, I was thinking, like, how did families function in this RV?
Well, you were thinking about the families. Let's skip ahead to that story about that family, and then we'll go back to the Airstream because you're thinking about how, you know, this family that was so inspiring to you. What was that story? This was an RV where you really did actually get a story attached to it, and it really moved you.
Well, yeah, I don't know. You know, I wasn't like crying, right?
It's, honey, it's okay to admit that I had to hold you.
No.
It's okay.
The reason why this RV was fascinating to me was it was the only RV with an extended story attached to it. So I thought it was a good example of where they could go with some of the other RVs. So one of these RVs was actually donated by Herbert and Mary Scranton, and it was a 1978 Coachman Leprechaun Ford Chateau Camper Special, okay? This was purchased new in 1978 for $14,000 by Mary's parents, and it was used continuously until 2006. So this was three generations of this family camped in this motorhome.
It still looked good.
Mm-hmm.
They took this guy.
Well,
I assume
it was stored inside.
Yeah, and you could just tell this family loved this RV, and I just pictured this like really handy guy taking care of it for years and loving it like a child.
Yeah, and it's just like the way it was inside with like the back couch, like there was like a jackknife, and then two different couches facing each other with the dinette, and then the bed that was like above, you know, the driver's seat and everything, and three generations. Traveled together for 5 weeks in that motorhome, right? Over the course of one summer. I think it was like in the 1980s or so, in 1987, three generations went on a 5-week trip. And that was like, I was like, oh my gosh, the story of what it was like for these three generations to be in this camper. Nobody was living in this camper. There wasn't an island with a dishwasher and all these other things that are, you know, in so many of the RVs today that multi-generation people are traveling in. They were all together in that RV.
And they probably had the time of their lives.
Yeah, yeah.
Or they all wanted to kill each other at the end of the trip.
Or they never did it again. We don't know.
Or both. Or both.
Because it can be both. That's the thing. It really can be both. So
now, let's not forget that little Airstream. Okay? So we saw the smallest Airstream ever built. 13 feet long. Known as Der Kleine Prinz.
The little prince.
It eventually became the Bambi and was the influence for the Bambi. It is cute as a button, and boy, did Wesley like that little 13-foot Airstream.
He loved the little ones. He has had me taking pictures of him inside the little ones. I have these pictures.
You're allowed in a lot of the RVs. If they're roped off, you're not allowed in, and we did follow the rules. But it's pretty cool because you really can get into a whole lot of them, except some of the really old ones or ones that are maybe particularly valuable. But they do let you inside to a whole bunch of them.
And then another one that was, of course, really popular with our kids. It was so funny because it's like a winding little path through these RVs. And
a road. It's like a road you walk down.
And our kids were coming back and we're looking at one and they're going, come on, come on, come on. We found the best one. It's amazing. We're going, enough already. We'll get there. So we kept pushing them off and they were losing their minds because we weren't coming to see the best trailer ever. So we finally turn around the corner to see the best trailer ever. And it was exactly like the long, long trailer.
The 1954 Spartan Imperial Mansion. And the long, long trailer, I think, came out in 1954, mm-hmm. right? So this was really pretty darn close to the one that was in the movie. And it is long. I mean, we walked to opposite ends of it, and I took a picture of you. You're like a dot at the end of the trailer.
The boys had so much fun going from one end of this to the other.
And yelling.
They were like just... They were crazy. They were like, it goes on. Look, another room. It was so funny.
And this was up on our Instagram account too, if you want to check out a picture. And you talked about how like everyone talks about residential interiors in the RV industry. You walk into this and it just looks like somebody's house.
Yeah, the couches had like the little peg legs and everything. It's just like, yeah, you're like, oh, let me pull up a chair here. And everything feels like a house. And it was interesting because in contrast, I'm talking so much about beds, but in contrast, this did have bunks and the back master bedroom. So it did feel more residential. It felt like a shift, like, I don't know.
Or a ship. Now, did you actually find this one beautiful, or is it more of an oddity? I actually think it's an attractive trailer from the outside, but it's so huge. It was hard to squeeze into a picture.
Yeah, I don't know that I'd want to tow this behind.
No, I'm thinking, where were their sites that big in 1954?
Yeah.
You weren't getting into the national parks with this thing.
I don't know. Well, I mean, let's go, you know, look at the long, long trailer. They didn't know where to go. They were getting stuck in mud.
Well, you know,
they
were
in those
amazing
private
campgrounds. They were going into those private RV. The long, long trailer is a great movie, by the way, with Lucille Ball and Desi Arnaz. If you haven't seen it, what's your excuse? Go see it. It's great. They were going into these resort style RV parks that were so cool and fun and hip. It was great.
Yeah. So, but you know, it was interesting to see. And then the other one that you really liked was the 1954 Yellowstone travel trailer.
I took a picture of that with the boys in front. I just think that's a beautiful, aesthetically pleasing trailer inside and out. It had that lighter birch inside.
Yeah, you like the wood, yeah.
So it wasn't, so a lot of the trailers in that period are very dark inside. Mm-hmm. This one was not quite as dark. It was, I wouldn't say it was light inside, but just in terms of one that was just purely beautiful and appealing, the Yellowstone really kind of stole my heart.
Well, you can see a lot of the pictures that we put up on our Instagram. We'll also get some other pictures up on the blog and in the show notes. And did you want to say anything else in particular about the trailers before we...
No, not about the trailers, but we did head upstairs into the library. So upstairs, there's a library, and they have, gosh, like every book ever published on RVing, every campground directory, every issue of Motorhome, every issue of Trailer Life. You just kind of walked in, and there it was. It maybe could have been a little bit more appealing to the senses.
It felt like their like workspace.
It was a it is actually kind of a research library. If you wanted to go and write a book on the history of RVing, you would want to access this library. We pulled out a copy of Trailer Life with one of our articles in it and showed the boys, and that was, you know, not to be sappy, that was kind of a cool moment for me. Like, our writing is here in the RV Hall of Fame. So the library, maybe they could make more of it, but they had a really great collection up there.
Right, but I do feel like they need to make curated displays, right? So just like librarians do in, you know, libraries, like, we need a table, and a table with a collection of books on a certain topic, and maybe a sign, you know, something that makes it look more thematic, pulled together. The point of that is always access, right? What makes you access when you go into a bookstore? How do you decide which books to read? Well, there's the table over here on knitting, right? Or like handcrafts. And then there's the table over here with all those new coloring books out. And, you know, that really matters in terms of people being able to discover things and look into things.
So, to pull you into the collection a little bit more. So what's your big takeaway on the RVMH Hall of Fame in Elkhart County, Indiana?
They have compiled an amazing collection of RVs that really demonstrates the range and history of manufacturing, you know?
Yeah, my big takeaway is that RVing has just a really rich, interesting, quirky, creative past. And I think it has a great future. And I think the RV Hall of Fame also has a great future. I'm really looking forward to going back and visiting that part of Indiana again. I think I'd really like to go in the fall and maybe see some foliage and visit the Hall of Fame, because they have big, big plans for making a $10 million expansion. They want to make it something great, and I really think they will.
All right. And I also look forward to them incorporating more of the history of RV culture into the different exhibits. And I think that that will make it a wow, you know, a really wow factor.
More multimedia,
yeah,
right?
Absolutely.
And loved it. Really worth it. Go and see it.
All right. So we will be back in a minute, and we are going to tell you about another kind of wow experience that we had while we were visiting the RV capital of the world when we took our Jayco tour. Stay tuned.
Choosing the right RV dealership is as important as choosing the right RV.
Campers Inn has thousands of RVs to choose from and has been the RVer's trusted resource for 50 years.
In 1966, Art and Fran Hirsch, along with their sons Bob, David, and Jeff, invested their family's life savings to buy four folding tent trailers, selling them out of their front yard in Acton, Massachusetts.
Their dream was to build a hometown dealership where every customer feels like family and becomes a customer for life.
50 years and three generations later, Campers Inn RV is the nation's largest family-operated dealership with 15 locations on the East Coast.
Their professional staff and certified trained service personnel are driven by the commitment to treat each customer fairly and with respect.
Find your family's next RV at campersinn.com.
Welcome back to the show, everybody. It's time for segment two of our feature topic, greetings from the RV capital of the world. So we just broke down the RVMH Hall of Fame for you. Now, for this segment, we want to talk about a factory tour. So if you're going to go to RV country, you really should take a factory tour. And different manufacturers do offer them. We went to the Jayco tour, of course.
Duh.
And the word on the street that we heard from multiple people is that the Jayco tour is the best one, and it was excellent.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we really, I don't know, I was like really shocked by how amazingly like up close and personal it was. I couldn't believe that
the workers are buzzing by in and around you while you're going through the plant. And I think we were both just blown away with how complex it is to build a modern RV. So we'll work up to that. So the tour starts in a little gift shop, and I really liked it. So they do about a short 10-minute movie on Jayco's history and heritage. And then I love gift shops. I love swag shops.
Yeah.
And what the great thing about the Jayco gift shop there is that everything's cheap. So I got a really nice Jayco t-shirt. It was like $6.80. So I just love the fact that they're not, it's not like they're making money, I think, off the gift shop. It's more just like,
it's just
hey,
like,
you know,
if you want something,
Jayco, here it is. Yeah. And they had thermoses and they had coffee mugs and they had a book about their history.
Boys tried to get us to purchase the Jayco roadside flares.
Yeah, they wanted the Jayco roadside for like the most expensive thing in the whole place. But lots of great ball caps and stuff like that, all at a really, really good price. So it's a nice start. And then what we loved is they have the Jayco trolley. Mm-hmm. So it is this old-fashioned trolley that the tour guide rides and takes you out to the plan.
Yeah, so Becky was our tour guide, and she got us all with our safety eye
glasses.
Gear. And then also, this is kind of nice, actually. It's nice, but it's not nice. It depends on whether you're a kid or an adult, because they had these the little earpieces so that Becky could talk into her microphone, and you didn't have to worry about like her yelling over all the factory noise. So it was great, because ideally, like, she's just talking into her mic, and you can just easily hear it in your ear. Of course, with the toddler, that became like a big debacle.
We couldn't keep it in his ear. And maybe it didn't. It's like, it's not that he needed to listen so that he could like ask questions and be involved. It's just that his brothers had it in their ears. And Max and Theo were spellbound, by the way.
Oh.
I mean, for two little boys to see an RV being built, like, that was really, really cool.
And I have to say, too, that they were complimented. We've talked about this on the show, and I'm bringing this up not to like say, oh, my kids are so awesome. I'm bringing this up on the show because in the past, we've said to parents, you know, don't be scared of bringing your kids on tours, because we've been through that where we've felt nervous about it because you're not sure if your kids are going to behave. Your kids aren't perfect. You don't want to ruin it for other people. You don't want to get like that, like hairy eyeball from people. You know, kids are a lot of the time very surprising on tours. Like, if they're engaging tours, like when we were in Annapolis, we have so many examples of tours that have just captured, you know, our kids' interest. And we were complimented by, I think, three different people about our kids' behavior on the tour. And I wanted to say, you know what? This is just interesting.
It's engaging. And as a teacher, like, one of the things that after 15 years in education, like, students behave well when they're really engaged. Mm-hmm. I mean, not all the time, but a lot of the time. And look, our boys also can be good when they're told, hey, you need to be good. You know, we're going on a tour. So they took us out to the luxury fifth wheel plant. Am I using the right word calling it a plant?
Yeah, I guess.
Because there's separate gigantic buildings for J-Flight and for the pop-up campers. And, you know, they build different ones in different buildings. So we went out to the luxury fifth wheel plant where they were building North Points, Pinnacles, and Designers, like Jayco's elite fifth wheels. So you're talking like $70,000 to $120,000 fifth wheels, just roughly guessing at the price range. These are homes on wheels. These are like elaborately designed, beautiful fifth wheels. And we both, I think, had the same takeaway. Like, this is amazing. It's amazing what they build. It's the complexity of what's behind the walls and underneath the floor and above the ceiling. It's astonishingly complex. And, you know, these are luxury fifth wheels, but still, that you could get one of these for $70,000, $80,000 kind of blows me away.
Yeah, that's what I don't know what I was expecting, but I think that I was really shocked at how much is produced right there. Like, when you see the cabinet shop, right, and them up there building all the cabinets that are going into this and everything, and you see just literally it going through these different stations, right? So there was like a couple of dozen stations, and Becky walked us through each one, starting with where things are, like the bottom is put on, the floor is put on with
the
tanks
steel frame,
and everything, right? Like, starting from there, we went all the way through every single station to the point where they were putting in furniture, right? And all the upholstery at the very end. And I mean,
and the slide rooms. So, like, that's a whole separate station where they build the slide outs.
Right. There's a separate section, and they actually build the slide outs. And then the slide outs are put in at another spot. And just little things, like her talking about how they cut out the windows, and then that cutout is sent to the window, you know, frame maker, and it's actually labeled for that individual RV so that the cutout is exactly right for the RV. So if there's any variation, you know, it doesn't matter because it's made for that one.
I was thinking, like, I could spend the rest of my life trying to learn how to do these things never would.
No.
I mean, it's a collective base of knowledge out there in Elkhart County and Middlebury and Northern Indiana that allows these things to be made. It's like a heritage. It's tradition. And it just got us thinking about RV quality in general. Because it's been in the RV media a lot, the kind of the issue of RV quality and whether there are problems with RV quality. So you and I had like some really serious conversations about that were informed and influenced by seeing the factory tour.
So we're not living under a rock. We know that this is a major conversation point for both the manufacturers of RVs and also the RV consumer.
Absolutely. And I think that we were just blown away by the complexity of these units, and it got us kind of thinking and having some serious conversations about RV quality. And what we've been reading a lot about are the complaints about the RV industry. And, you know, look, if you get a bum unit or you get a unit with a problem in it, people are justified to be upset. But if we could all step back away from that, Stephanie and I have this kind of other perspective about it, that we are getting these really complicated, amazing products for really, really low prices.
The opposite of price inflation.
I mean, there is like a race to the bottom in terms of price point in the RV industry. It's so competitive. It has been so competitive. And some people out there are saying, well, there's consolidation. Well, guess what? I mean, there's still tons of competition. We bought our Jayco White Hawk for $23,500. We have spent almost 300 nights in it, and it works. It functions. And
we use it. Bathroom, stove, oven, refrigerator, lights. We use every component of our RV.
But we think the consumer has to take on some of the blame for this in a sense. It's a big picture, right? To be kaleidoscopic about it, you know, an RV consumer will show up at an RV show and look at two RVs, one at $19,000, one at $23,000, and they're going to go for the $19,000 one more often than not. They are.
Well,
and so the RV manufacturers are constantly driving down prices and trying to get to the lowest price point, but yet consumers have these expectations that everything's going to work and work perfectly for a long, long time.
I think it's a little different than just looking at two RVs, one at 19 and one at 23. In my sort of operating theory, watching a lot, you know, we have a lot of listeners that go through this process and we kind of like watch people do it. We've been through it ourselves. We were new to the RV game when we bought our first, you know, pop-up. So we really understand the process. I think that many people walk in to the buying process with a budget in mind. And I actually recently heard somebody in the industry say, in the dealership side of things, say, people want the most trailer for that budget, right? So if you walk in thinking $30,000 I want to spend, and you start shopping, what you do is you go into RV after RV, and you are thinking, which one gives me the most RV for my budget? But the thing is most of the time what you're looking at and what you're judging are all of the bells and whistles, not the things that are really going to break and that are behind the walls. So you're saying, ooh, this one gives me massaging recliner chairs, and this one gives me this dinette that folds away, and this one gives me a workspace and more counter space. But nobody's saying this one for $30,000 has this kind of roof or this kind of enclosed floor.
And we think that goes for every price point. Maybe you're the consumer who's at $100,000, mm-hmm. right? But you want to get the most for your $100,000. And so the industry is then competitive in driving down prices at that price point. And I'm sure it's the same at the $500,000 motorhome price point.
Oh, I think it is.
This got us thinking about the auto industry, and it got me thinking about the truck industry, all right? I think that most of our listeners would agree that the three major American car companies really all make great trucks at this point. I think Ford makes great pickup trucks. I own one. I think Chevy is making awesome pickup trucks. I've owned one. And I think that Dodge makes really good pickup trucks. Now, Is there a race to the bottom with price when it comes to buying a pickup truck? Absolutely not. The prices of pickup trucks have gone up and up and up to the place where you could spend $75,000 on a new Ford pickup truck, right? If it's equipped a certain way with leather seats, a Lariat, whatever. So you could get a pickup truck that's the same price as a classy motorhome. So we see in the RV industry that there's this competitive race to the bottom with prices, and then everyone's freaking out when the quality's not right, right? In the auto industry, the quality, in my opinion, you can disagree with me, listener, if you want, the quality of the pickup trucks that America is producing right now is awesome, and we are paying for them. We are paying through the noses for those pickup trucks. A lot of us have truck payments that are like mortgages.
Right. And we think nothing of that. And trucks cost way more than people are spending on many of their first travel trailers. And that is the most popular, you know, entry level. I think the price of the average travel trailer is 30 something thousand. I don't have the exact number right here. I think it's in the 37,000 range. So people are spending more on their tow vehicles than they are on that trailer.
Twice as much.
RV has electric, plumbing, moving furniture, slides, okay, all these components.
And if you're buying a motorhome, it has an engine, just like a truck has an engine.
Right.
So people laugh off, oh, trucks are getting expensive these days. But people aren't, you don't see people like walking around angry about the price of trucks. People are kind of just like, they pay that price and they get a product that doesn't really break down too much, that's very high quality. But in the RV industry, people want the bargain basement price and the quality that they're getting in the automobile industry. You can't have both.
Yeah, and that's why I think doing the factory tour, I was struck by sort of the consumer responsibility in all of this. Like, maybe if more consumers were, you know, like involved in the manufacturing of their RV, right? Like maybe if they kind of like, you know, were thinking more about it as a piece of sort of like, I don't know, like something they're purchasing that has like quality, and that they're looking for that quality in it, and they weren't just looking for a price tag. We might be in a different place right now.
I think that we might have to stop having the expectation that we can get a travel trailer for $17,000.
Yeah.
I hate to say it. I think
that we're
going to
have to pay. Just expect things to go wrong.
Well, no, but I think the industry should make better units,
yes,
and charge more for them.
Right.
I think that the travel trailer should cost 20, you know, 30, not 20, mm-hmm, or 40, not 30. Just at every price point, make it better and charge me more for it, and I'd be happy,
right,
with that.
Exactly. So we would like to see both parties kind of take responsibility, right? We would like to see the manufacturers charge a fair price, like a higher price for a more quality product. And we'd like the consumer to be willing to pay the price for that quality product.
And I think there's a huge gap in the industry that could be filled. Because at the high end, you know, you have very expensive Airstreams, which I think most people would still say are of very high quality. And then most of the other manufacturers are making lower priced travel trailers. Forget motorhomes for a minute. I think that there's this price gap in the middle that the industry's missing. That $30,000, $40,000, $50,000 price point for something of very high quality doesn't have to have all the bells and whistles in the world, but just has to be well made.
Yeah.
And I think people will pay that price for it if
maybe
they know it's going to be good.
But I've seen people at RV shows enough to know that everybody wants three TVs and vibrating
people
massage
want
chairs.
Three TVs, vibrating massage chairs for $17,999. Thank you very much.
Out the door.
When that thing breaks, you know, or when they discover, hey, these TVs are really cheap.
Yeah.
You know, this isn't a Sony TV. My TV broke. Okay, well, you paid nothing for it. So, look, I'm not putting all the blame on the consumer. I could see some of our listeners getting mad, and particularly if anyone's had a bad experience. But it's an ecosystem. And when something's going wrong in an ecosystem, it's usually not just because of something that's happening in one part of the ecosystem.
Yeah, that's very scientific of you. Thanks.
That may have made no sense at all. So anyway, our big takeaway was these RVs are amazing.
Yeah.
The industry is selling them at really low prices, making it very accessible. But then there's some problems. And I just don't think people should be shocked with those problems based upon the prices they're paying.
Yeah. I mean, I was really amazed to watch these RVs being built. And I thought, what an amazing piece of craftsmanship. I mean, obviously, I don't know. I pictured more of an assembly line, kind of like you see cars being made, and I pictured more of that. And this was like
more
people,
craftsmanship.
Yeah, this was way more craftsmanship. People,
but they do have to build them fast.
Things.
They have quotas. They have to build them fast. But I got this appreciation for Elkhart and for Northern Indiana. This is a hard-working culture. You have the Amish there working in the factories. You have everybody else working there. The shifts start at 5 a.m. because of the heat in the summer. And you have one person at each station. These people are working really hard to make these products that we enjoy so much. So I think we all need to step back from it and think about it as a collective thing.
Well, one of the things we need to step back and do is say, if this is a RV destination that we're encouraging people to visit, then we better tell them where they're going to camp and we better tell them where they're going to eat. So you ready to come back in a second and do that?
Absolutely.
All right, stay tuned.
Award-winning Jellystone Parks have everything your family needs to make long-lasting camping memories.
And now is the perfect time to book your stay for an activity-packed, themed weekend this fall.
From tailgate parties to pumpkin festivals to Halloween celebrations, Jellystone Parks have calendars full of fall fun.
And with over 80 locations in the United States and Canada, you can have a quality camping experience that is also close to home.
Visit CampJellystone.com to find a Jellystone Park near you.
Welcome back to the show, everybody. It's time for segment three of our episode, Greetings from the RV Capital of the World. So segment one, we talked all about the RV MH Hall of Fame. Segment two, we talked about doing a factory tour at Jayco and then went all editorial on you about RV quality and whatnot. Segment three, we want to talk about some camping and eating options in the area. Now, Stephanie, we did not find an amazing campground to stay at in this area, just to be honest.
Right. So everybody knows our policy. We're not looking to, you know, bash anyone, but we just were not thrilled. We weren't like, there wasn't this strong recommendation coming out of our camping experience there. So we, in talking to a lot of locals, we find that that's actually a little bit of an issue around there.
I think most people, it's like if you asked a local, like, hey, where's the great campground to camp here, like they'd kind of scratch their heads.
Yeah.
So we stayed at the Elkhart County Middlebury KOA, which was solid. It was fine. I liked it more than Stephanie did. Perfectly acceptable, clean, safe, well located. It was right in Middlebury, close to a lot of the things you want to do. But it's not the place we could give a glowing recommendation for. But I'd say if you want to go visit the area, it's a perfectly fine choice.
Right. It's a place to stay. And that to us is not a glowing recommendation. So that's why we wouldn't feature it as such.
And I thought with some relatively small changes, it could be really, really nice. Stephanie got mad at like the 500 signs all around the inside of the pool that were like practically yelling, you know, all these signs like yelling at you about this rule, that rule, the other rule. 500 is an exaggeration, but there were like so many signs on the gate around the pool. It was like, ah!
It just, you know what?
We had a nice deluxe site too.
We did. I mean, our site really was nice very site. Nice. So we really think that this is a perfectly fine place to stay. I think that I will use this campground. We're going to do a rehashing of tips for campground owners in the future. And I would use this campground as a case study because it's not a bad campground.
Yeah. And now we also, one of our friends at Jayco, and a big shout out to our friends at Jayco who recommended so many of the great food options. Okay. And
they
led us to all the delicious treats. So thank you if you're listening. We also went and drove through Ebby's Pines RV parking campground.
Ebby's.
And that was a pretty property. It had a little river that ran through it. But it, again, just wasn't like, and there were nice pools even. Lots of seasonals, and it wasn't like a place I'd say, oh yeah, like here's a strong recommendation, stay here.
Dated.
Yeah, things needed a little, a little dated, needed a little bit refurbishing. Now, next time, I think we'll try the South Bend Elkhart North KOA because during our time in our RV country, we heard three or four people say that they really did like that. And it's also pretty close to South Bend, so we would get to
it would be another,
check out South Bend,
right.
Go Fighting Irish. It's a little bit kind of further away, at least from the stuff in Middlebury, but not too far from Elkhart. So I think that we'll give that a shot next time. So look, there's decent options there. There's not that grand slam option there that we'd say, oh yeah, this is the place.
And for all of our dear, dear listeners in Indiana, do not get into a tizzy about this. We know there are amazing places to camp, especially people are always talking about the southern, you know, part of the state and how, you know, many
and beautiful state parks, but we wanted full hookups and we wanted to be close to the action.
Exactly. We were, you know, people talk about base camps, right? And when you're in a place for a very specific reason, you want a base camp that's close by so you're not driving too long every day.
Now, there were awesome, awesome food recommendations. I mean, we had fun eating in Middlebury and Elkhart. And again, thanks to our friends at Jayco who pointed us to all the best places. So, oh my gosh, the Rise and Roll Amish Bakery and Deli. The sandwiches were out of this world. Super affordable, creative, fun, interesting. And then the donuts.
Yeah, it's really the prepared goods that you need to go here for, the baked goods, because this is if you
the
only
caramel cinnamon donuts.
Yeah.
Off the record, someone told us these are known in the area as Amish crack. And we debated whether to say that on the show, but I think that we just have to give you a sense of how good these donuts were. And look, we distracted the boys with whoopie pies. And we had some delicious donuts. And you got something else,
too. Well, I got sticky buns because they're my own personal downfall.
The sticky buns were sticky. And they were buns.
Yeah.
They were delicious. So if you go to this area, you must go to Rise and Roll.
Right. And also they have tons of jams and jellies. And I got a pepper jam, like a hot pepper jam. That's one of my favorite things. I also got a spicy mango salsa. So things like that, that are more of like up my alley where I can get a little jar of and nobody else touches it. And I just enjoy it for like long periods of time. They had tons of stuff like that.
I got blackberry pickles. Jelly. Yeah. And I've been making peanut butter and jelly sandwiches with that jelly, like for the boys, like crazy. Today they were like, Dad, we're not eating peanut butter and jelly anymore. You've been feeding it to us for 3 days. And I was like, yes, you are, because we're going out to do something and I need to make you lunch fast.
Yeah.
And that jelly, good jelly.
Yeah.
And then guess what? After complaining, they all wanted a second
of
peanut butter and
did.
Jelly sandwich. We also went to Das Essen House, which is the Amish cooking kind of buffet type place. People debate which is better, Das Essen House or Blue Gate. And we heard Blue Gate from reliable sources is maybe a little bit better food-wise, but Das Essen House was right in Middlebury and close to where we were staying.
Right.
The boys sure did love the mac and cheese.
Oh my gosh, and I think that Max called something else on the buffet epic, like the mashed potatoes.
This was the first time the boys ever went to a buffet.
Yeah.
Stephanie does not really do buffets. The boys were just, I think, amazed at the concept of like a buffet. You can just keep going up and getting more food.
Yeah.
And so, I mean, look, I got to be honest with you. I didn't think the food was that great.
No.
But, you know, if you like buffets and you want to eat a lot of food at a bargain price, hey.
Right, because they had the noodles, like, you know, the Amish noodles with the beef and everything. So I kind of got some of the more traditional foods that you guys, I don't think.
Yeah, and there was there was some good stuff there. But like I said, some people say, hey, Blue Gate's a little bit better. Now, is it Venturi?
The Venturi in Goshen. So we went one night and we had on recommendation, had some great pizzas. This is coal-fired oven pizzas, really like crisp crust.
Creative, quirky. Stephanie said great pizzas. That is coming from a New Jersey pizza snob.
Well, because they're like the gourmet pizza. So I actually had like a fig and prosciutto.
And prosciutto. That's what I ordered.
A fig and prosciutto pie that was delicious. And I don't remember what you had for your pizza. The boys...
I got a pepperoni pizza.
Oh, okay.
It was delicious.
But so we had a bruschetta for an appetizer. So they did a really nice job there. And it was something different. If, you know, you overate at the Das Essen House one day, you could go and have a nice kind of salad. We had a delicious salad there. Things like that were good.
Yeah, and it was really pretty world-class pizza. And we didn't get to spend too much more time in Goshen. Did I say it right?
No, and we wanted to go to the Goshen Brew Company because that was recommended to us also. And it's supposed to be very good, but it was closed at the time that we were going to go there because everything apparently closes at like 5 p.m. on Sundays.
Yeah, we've noticed that in different parts of the country. New Jersey, everything's open all the time, which is its own problem. We also had a really nice lunch at the legendary Grind in Middlebury. Tiny, cute little place, sort of in the back of like a furniture antique store.
Amish furniture, so you can kind of
like
shop
six
around.
Tables.
Yeah. Right, and they made really nice sandwiches.
And had good coffee.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So that was a great place.
And then, of course, dessert at Yup's Ice Cream.
Milkshakes, I think, were the ticket.
Okay, I did get a milkshake. I got like a flurry kind of thing. I got like a Butterfinger flurry.
It was in the fridge still the other night, like 8 days later, and I had a bite of it. It was still good. But the boys all got milkshakes. They were really good. So Yup's is sort of that place that's got the line at night, and everyone's excited to get their ice cream. It really was like delicious ice cream, and we definitely had our share.
Yeah, now on a side note, Shipshawana is only 10 minutes or so away.
The flea market was so much fun.
And we did do the flea market and auction just because we had never actually been to like that kind of a thing with the kids. And so I thought that would be fun.
It was a hot day, but we had a good time.
Yeah.
And I bought some tin signs.
I
got ripped off by the lady at the tin sign shop.
I watched the whole thing go down.
I pride myself in getting the best price for everything. I wouldn't call myself a cheapskate. Other people might. I don't call myself that. They had a tin sign for the long, long trailer, of all things. And there's like 100 signs in the shop that say that the tins are $10.
Yeah.
Everywhere you look, there's signs that say it's
$10. That before you went up there.
Well, I didn't.
I did.
So she charged me $12.
And then she gave you an explanation for why it was
special. I didn't blink at the $12.
You said, whoa. You said, how much?
Well, I paid the $12. I was like, $12? Yeah, $12 for a long, long trailer tin. It's awesome. I'll put a photo up on Instagram. But as I'm walking out, I start to see the signs everywhere saying that the tins are $10. So then I saw the Smokey the Bear one, which I wanted too. So I brought that one back to buy it. And she said $10. And I said, well, how come the other one was $12? And she said, oh, that one's an antique. Very rare.
Very rare, the long, long trailer. Very rare.
She said, that's the only one there is.
I watched the whole thing go down from across the store, and I quietly shook my head. And it's just like that wifely thing. Like, I didn't say a thing. It was only later, we're walking, and you said, you know, I think I got ripped off. And I looked at you and I said,
She saw the sparkle in my eye. Because I asked her if she had any RV company tins, like any RV culture tins. She's like, no, I don't have any of those.
Number.
And I found the long, long trailer one and I held it up and smiled. And I said, see, you do have an RV one. And then the price went up $2.
Yeah, because you were excited about that. You weren't like, I can take it or leave it. I watched it go down. And I was like, he's getting raked over the coals.
Look, the flea market was a hootenanny.
Yeah.
And I really recommend you gotta go do it.
And they have the livestock, like the auctions and everything. So I couldn't get the boys to go in. If they had gone in, they would have enjoyed watching it, but they didn't quite know. And we were busy looking at other things and we had been there a while. But that might be, you know, really interesting for your kids too.
We wanted to take them in, but it was hot and we sort of spent our 2 hours there and got some cold lemonades and that was it for the day.
Yeah. So we had a surprisingly great time. There was even more things that we could have done that we didn't get to do.
I would have enjoyed a horse and buggy ride and some more time in the Amish countryside. It's very pretty. I mean, it's hot there in August for one thing, right?
Right.
Like, I mean, the ideal time to go might be more like September, October, or maybe May, June. I'm not an expert on
the
weather.
I think fall. Fall's
I think
nice
fall
time,
would really be lovely in Amish country there. And I just really recommend that all of our RVFTA fans out there really kind of plan a trip to Elkhart County and get a deeper appreciation for the history, the lineage, the culture of the RV industry.
Yeah, and a big thank you to the RVMH Hall of Fame for, you know, we were there, we had a great time, for putting on a great show, and then also to Jayco for hosting us and doing that factory tour. We just had a great time.
And by
there.
The way, the factory tour is free at Jayco. You do need to call ahead and reserve your space. It does fill up. So our podcast is sponsored by Jayco. We still had to kind of call ahead and get our space reserved.
Yeah, we were like, yep, we're going to be there. We're going to be on that day.
But it is free too, which is such a cool thing because it's like a major half day activity and you don't have to pay for it. You just got to call ahead and schedule it and get on their list.
Yeah. So, we really encourage you to kind of like make this either a stop in a longer journey or a little like long weekend getaway, and it'll be fun.
If you're heading out west, from the Northeast, it's a no-brainer for a great, 3 or 4 day stop. Absolutely.
All right. We'll be right back to wrap up the show.
Thank you so much for listening to episode number 102 of RVFTA. Greetings from the RV capital of the world. We really do appreciate every single download. And thank you to our sponsors, to Campers Inn, to Yogi Bear's, Jellystone Park Camp Resorts, and to Cabela's.
And also thank you to Progressive. We have another RV travel tips that's sponsored by Progressive Insurance for this episode. Before taking your pet on a long distance road trip, get them acclimated to traveling shorter distances first. It will help them get used to the sudden movement and noises of being on the road. Be patient. It can take several weeks for them to feel comfortable, and that's just another way Progressive has you covered while you're out on the road.
Maggie went for her first big swim today.
She did.
Oh my God.
In the Great Lakes.
She has been the ideal RV traveling dog. We all love her to death, and she's just been wonderful on this trip. Love you, Maggie.
And we're doing the same thing with her that we've done with our kids. We're kind of like pushing her out of her comfort zone sometimes, and we're teaching her new things.
Yeah, she didn't want to go home last time. She didn't want to get out of the truck.
She wouldn't get out of the truck
she
today.
She loves RV travel. We got the right dog for us.
All right. We'll talk to you soon, everybody.
See you at the campground.
Bye.